Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome back to Small Caps. My name is Kerry Stevenson, and today we're going into the technology space. But don't glaze over, because this is actually pretty exciting. Everybody knows that we've had COVID and people are working from home. All this contactless stuff is going around. And the company I'm talking to today, TZ Limited, they've come up with a solution for locking physical spaces without you actually having to be here. So tailwinds for this company, ladies and gentlemen, are massive. Joining me today is Mario Vecchio. He is the managing director. Now, he did sit on the board back in 2018, 2019, got himself a bit busy, and now he's back as managing director and making some changes to the company, which are really exciting for you as shareholders or potential shareholders and investors. Mario, thank you for joining me on Small Caps today. Great to see you.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for your time.
Well, Mario, it's going to be a really interesting chat with you today, because there's lots that's been happening with TZL. First of all, give our listeners, some of whom won't know TZL, give us the brief, I guess, the elevator pitch of who you are and what problem you solve right now.
Well, basically, in a very short sentence, as you said, we open and close physical spaces. Now, that might sound simple, but when you're doing it in a remote basis, and when you're doing it for a large organization, it becomes quite a complex issue, especially if those physical spaces are small lockers or rooms or whatever they might be, and there's hundreds of them or thousands of them. So you want to be able to have chain of custody and control of the access of who gets in and who gets out.
Good point. So that's what you guys do. You've got a software that can actually, so I don't physically need to be there. For example, I've got an office in the city. I don't physically need to be there to lock that up or open it?
No, you don't need to be there to lock it up or open it. But also that's at the corporate level, the customer level. The user that wants to get into that physical space obviously needs to be there, because they're physically there, to get in and out whatever they need to get in and out.
So you sat on the board of TZL, as I said in my introduction, back in 18-19. Then you got busy with other projects. You've come back into the hot seat only about a month ago. What's drawn you back to the business, and what changes are you making?
Well, for me, it was kind of unfinished business. And I sat on the board and had seen the potential of this business. I mean, there's brand names here like Microsoft and Apple and Cisco and Google, you know, that are big customers for TZ globally. 63% of the company's revenue is overseas. You know, it's a great technology success story, right? Okay. And so it was frustrating to sit on the board and not understanding why it's not growing and what are the issues. And I quickly saw that they'd come from this locking world, but they'd been asked by their customers over time to write software to help them inside their workflows of how people use this stuff. And they built up software assets over time, but didn't understand what the value of those assets really were. And in many cases, they'd give the software away or sell it once, and that was it. And so I planted the seed with the management at the time to say, guys, you have valuable software here, and you need to start charging appropriately for it instead of tiny amounts of money, and B, instead of just taking a one-time fee, you need to sign it up as a service. Because the whole world has moved to that. That no one's stopping that wave from breaking onshore. It's happening in every part of our technology society. And so they did take on some of that and started to work through that. But I think at the time, their lack of knowledge of the market, because they're more focused on the physical locks themselves, which are fantastic devices, they really didn't understand the value of what they had inside this business at the time. So, and to me, it was unfinished business to go now and look at this asset and say, how do I grab this by the horns and go and create it into what it needs to be?
So in doing so, I mean, listen, you've only been there for 5 minutes, five shakes of a lamb's tail, but you've seen it for a long time. So have you been able to go in and make quick, massive changes, or is it going to take time? In other words, what I'm looking at, I guess, is from an investor point of view, excuse me, are you seeing growth and change from the moment you got in, or will it take time?
No, the good news, as I said, in spite of itself, it has the best blue chip customers in the world.
Yeah, I heard that, yeah.
Right. So that's always a great advantage. It's got international customers. And so when you take that, and I've had a look in there for the last month, what I see is demand from the customers and prospective customers wanting new features, software features built, just escalating by the day. And the company needs to understand that that's where the value of the business is, and that's what I'm going to do and what I'm bringing to it. So we're changing, apart from managing the growth of that development of that feature set, because that's always a challenge in itself, because yep. You've got to make sure you've got the right skills and the right resources. And I'm doing that, and I've set up a software development center in India as well, because I've run them before in the past.
We'll come back to that.
Yep. To help scale the business. What we're doing is going to change our whole business model from, you know, in the past we've said, that'll cost you $10,000 to build that software, and they'll do it as a cost plus basis and sell it to the customer and never to be, you know, never.
And it's a one-off.
Yeah. So my model is to look at that feature, understand if that feature can be resold to other customers, sell it to that customer as a setup fee, and then an ongoing annuity.
Yeah.
So, for example, we've got an opportunity right now in South Africa, and the customer, the original quote we were going to give them before I got there was $70,000 for this project. I said no. Charge them $35,000 for that project, which is basically our cost. And now I want you to charge them $100,000 a year for that software. Now, the customer, whilst the customer has not accepted that just yet, that's where I'm taking the business, right? Because I know that customer will pay that sort of money for that service for the scale they need. And that's the just completely different thinking with what they already have. So that's a significant change for the business. We did sell perpetual licenses, which once again are one-offs.
Yeah.
The Australian customers we've started that seed building, and so we already have customers that are using SaaS in a very small way, but we haven't done any of that work yet in the US. And so I'm in the process of re-educating the sales force. I'm in the process of repositioning the sales compensation plan to make sure that people are compensated for selling the right things, right? And obviously we need to educate our customers. The good news is our customers in the US are a lot of technology companies. They get this better than anybody. Yeah. Some of those companies invented software as a service.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Some of them were just like, hey, why didn't you do this years ago?
Yeah, exactly. So I've got a plan for migration from existing customers for perpetual licenses into a SaaS model, and new customers going forward. So that is a huge change for this business. And pricing it correctly too. The company has not understood how to price its software assets.
Okay, and why do you know how to price the software assets? What's your background that you understand how this whole SaaS as a service, software as a service works?
Also running my own companies for many years, I also understand how much I paid back to the other software vendors that I was using. But also being in tech all my life, because that's all I know, I have a very good view on what the competition's doing, what the market's prepared to pay versus what we're charging. And I think that there is absolute room for expansion on our prices for all of the software services that we have today.
So, Mario, in doing what you're doing, do you think that, let's talk numbers, because this is an investment chat that we're having, and shareholders or potentially future shareholders, I want to see where the value lies and where you're at the moment. Do you need, like, are you well funded at the moment? Are you seeing the numbers increasing? Are you looking at your forward numbers thinking it's already started? So talk me through some of the numbers.
Yeah, so as I said previously, the demand for features for software development is just difficult to manage right now. So we have the demand looking, staring at us in the face. Okay. For all different use cases. And let me just give you a quick use case of someone that approached us in the US less than 4 weeks ago. We're all driven by what's happened with COVID, right?
Absolutely.
And everyone, maybe not me, but certainly my kids, ring up Uber Eats and go and get something from Uber Eats, whether it's McDonald's or KFC or wherever it is, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Delivered, right? And COVID has kind of created the big rush on that. Now, having said that, the Uber part is actually okay, it works. But at the back of house, it's a mess. And so what you've got is you've got the Uber guy shows up to, let's say, a fast food chain. He has to go into the store, typically, and I'm talking globally here.
Yeah.
He has to go into the store. Here's my parcel I've got to pick up for my customer, picks it up, gets in the car if he doesn't need it on the way there. And and guess what? He's picked up the wrong one. And he's delivered it to the place and they've got delivered the wrong one because it's just all sitting in one open area.
Right.
So what we're doing with another partner is they're putting lockers on the outside of these fast food chains.
Oh, wow.
And not only that, the lockers are, some of them are heated and some of them are cooled. So now the Uber guy shows up but when he shows up, he's got a QR code or a PIN number for his hot stuff and for his cold goods, goes in there, scans, door opens, collects cold, collects hot, puts it in the car. There's no chance he's got the wrong stuff. Not only that, but now the fast food chain knows how long those goods have been in there and whether they've gone past their expiry time, whether they need to be thrown out or not. They know what's been picked up, what hasn't been picked up. So they've got a whole chain of custody through the whole process. And so that's just a really interesting one.
Very. But let me interrupt you, Mario. You're not doing those lockers, are you? You're doing the software that operates the lockers, not
correct.
The lockers themselves. So you're in partnership
yes.
with the device company, but
yes.
your company is we make sure that it all works.
Correct.
But the hardware is not our problem.
Yeah, we make sure the fast food company knows which Uber driver got it, what time they got it. How long the goods have been in cold storage or hot storage, notify them if those goods, you know, if that McDonald's hamburger needs to be taken out and a new one put in because the Uber driver got stuck in traffic or whatever it might have been, et cetera.
But is this proprietary software that others can't emulate, or is there a low barrier to entry so anyone could do it?
No, it's quite a barrier to entry because whilst that is an application, it's got to sit on the foundation of everything that we've built over a decade, right?
Okay.
And being able to get the device to open and close, being able to hook into the fast food chain's back-end systems to make sure they get all the right recording and information and logs that they need. So, it's not a trivial task.
Okay. So companies like all those fast food companies, you know, the Subways, the KFCs, the McDonald's, are they clients at the moment, or are they?
No.
We're out there showing them what they could do because clearly COVID's your friend.
Yeah, COVID is my friend. No, typically we haven't done anything really with the fast food chains before, but this has come about because of the amplification of food delivery. Right, food delivery is just globally gone nuts. And so it creates all new problems. And one of the problems is that it's not as if the Uber guy can drive through the McDonald's pickup to pick his goods up, he's actually got to go into store.
Right.
Creates an issue of, you know, should he be in there anyway? You know, is it better to have him outside than, or he or she outside or inside, et cetera, et cetera. So.
Okay, so where's it? You said earlier in the interview that 63% of your current revenue is international. Whereabouts? Yeah. Are we talking the Europe? Are we talking the US? Are we talking China? Where's the current growth? Where's your
predominantly all in the US.
And is there a lot more to come from the US? Is that where your focus is at the moment?
Yeah, it's certainly where our focus is, and we really haven't scratched the surface. What we're seeing right now is, once again, COVID is our friend. You know, the workplace is no longer ever going to be the same. And what I mean by that is, you know, the people who have been working from home, maybe some of them will keep working from home and never go back to the office. But the majority of them will probably go back to the office two times a month, two times a week, 4 days a week, whatever is right for that company. And so what we're seeing is, whilst companies are, in some ways, shrinking their office footprints, they're expanding what we do. So what we do is we put our technology, our software, into their locker systems inside their offices. So now, if you wanted to go into work through a corporation, typically what you've got to do is you've got to log in and make an appointment to say you're coming, so they know you're coming.
Okay.
Because that's part of the COVID plan. So now that they're coming, they will allocate you a cubicle. They'll allocate you where you put all your goods and stuff, et cetera, et cetera. Not only that, but they'll say, yes, you can come in between 2 and 3 or 9 to 5 these days.
Yep.
After that, you can't come in. That way the company has a track and trace of who's been in the office for their plans and who's been out of the office, who's accessed what, et cetera, et cetera. We're also seeing asset management become a big issue as well. So you've got your laptop and it's broken. Once again, you check it in to your IT department, you go and put it into a locked space inside the office and with your QR code, your cabinet opens up, you put your faulty device in. In another cabinet somewhere else, you QR code, you get a unit that's working and off you go. Now, if you want to have that replaced back, then they'll tell you when it's replaced back. But you never actually have to touch or feel or talk to anyone.
Oh, I think that's a bit sad, Mario. I like touch and feel and chatting to people.
Or maybe from a distance. So we're seeing a lot of that. And another example on an industrial scale is we've just done a project with Westrac, the Caterpillar dealer.
Oh, yeah.
And we're talking big excavation machine, all that machinery. So what we've done with Westrac is that we've hooked into their systems, we've built an application for them. So you're a Westrac customer. You always need spare parts if you have these machines.
True.
Right? Now, some spare parts might be too big, but anything you could physically carry. Sorry, I just had something pop up on my screen.
That's all right.
Something you physically carry. When you place your order on Westrac, goes into the system, it's determined whether it's delivery. Some things will be delivered and some things will be to collect. Westrac have enclosed areas, locations around the country. And the order gets placed on Westrac, then the Westrac system automatically tells the store to go and put this into location X. Then that notifies the customer who says, your goods are ready, they're in location X. The guy or girl shows up, 3 o'clock in the morning, whenever they want, go in there.
So it's like the old-fashioned 24/7 locker that you could just go, but you had to physically go with your key and open it up.
Correct. Go in there. He'll get his parts. The system notifies Westrac. The parts are there. It can be invoiced or money can be paid, whatever the process is.
But I want to know from a TZ point of view, from where the revenue comes from, is that a monthly, like do you charge Westrac monthly or annually in order for you to have this software, which we're constantly updating, I assume?
Yeah. Yeah, we have a software contract with them, and that's an annual, either the customer either chooses a 12-month software contract paid quarterly in advance, or a three-year or a five-year software contract paid quarterly in advance.
Quarterly in advance, love it. All right, so Mario, are you already seeing the fruits of your work? In other words, are the revenues increasing since you've started to do this, or is it still too early to tell?
Certainly the SaaS revenue is now, we're watching in Australia the SaaS revenue increase, and we're watching the US, the beginnings of the US starting to increase. So if I look at my sales funnel is around $90 million right now.
Okay.
And if I look at the sales funnel for the company this time last year, it was around $25 million.
Wow, that's massive. Okay, all right.
And so my job is to, and challenge is to make sure we execute on that sales funnel.
Right.
And make sure that we can actually execute and get high quality products and software services to customers.
What do you see is, are there any headwinds for you? Because we've already said COVID's been your friend. Any headwinds?
The headwinds are making sure we've got the right resources in place at the right time with the right skills to execute on the software. And as I said, as I touched on earlier, I've put in a software development centre in India. And
yeah,
we'll keep our software development centre in Australia, but we're going to scale that up and scale that up very quickly.
So in terms of investors, where do you see, what I'd like to know is, are you revenue positive, like are you positive profitably at the moment?
We just put out our 4C for last quarter, and yes, we're cash flow positive. And so from my perspective, you know, like anything, I can see how I can work within the framework and the budget of the business to keep that going.
Okay.
We'll always keep our options open. If I see something that is a fantastic opportunity that we need to do with something outside of our current working cash flows, then we'll go back to the market.
Okay. So with the current structure, well funded for growth and continued growth.
Yeah.
But if you see an opportunity, Mario, you might have to go back to the market and say, listen, we're going to raise some capital because here's how we're going to expand fast.
Correct. And right now, that's not typically acquisitions. Not at the value. I'm not going to do any acquisitions at the value where the business is today.
Yep.
But it will be project opportunities of being able to roll out, you know, a very large scale project for a global multinational fast food chain, for example, or whatever it might be.
We're running out of time, Mario, because there's so much. But it sounds to me like, as I said right at the beginning, you've got in the hot seat a month ago. I can see your passion, and I can see your vision about where you want to take this. And as you said a moment ago, this time last year it was 25 million in the pipeline. Right now it's 90 million, ladies and gentlemen. That's almost four times what it was last year. So making a difference, Mario. Let's do my sign off, which is always the same. It's like three reasons why investors should be sitting up and really taking a look at TZ, which I think the share price I saw today was about 10, 11 cents. So where's the value and why the growth and why they should be looking at TZL right now?
Oh, I think I have a track record, and I've come here because I see the opportunity, and I'm here to grow the business. I know how to do this in a software business and grow on a global scale. So that's reason number one. Reason number two is the tailwinds that I talked to you about how the market is not changing. It's changed.
Yeah.
It's done. We're all buying stuff on e-commerce. We're all doing click and collect. We're all going to have a hybrid workplace of some description. So that is done and dusted, and we can take advantage of that. And the last one is I'm changing changing the revenue model of the company to become a annuity revenue model for the business. And my aspirational goal is to have 80% of our revenue software only in the next 36 months.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, the new managing director of TZL, certainly not letting the grass grow under his feet. And as you said earlier, COVID has been their friend and continues to be their friend as he works to ramp up the revenue, already profitable, but already ramping up quickly. Mario Vecchio, thank you so much for joining me on Small Caps today. I look forward to having a chat with you in the new year. to see how much growth you've done, because I can feel your energy and what you're up to.
Thanks. All right. Thank you, everyone. Thank you.